MG Michael with us as we talk about the book of Revelation. We'll also take your phone calls this hour when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Let's get into it with you, MG.
Thanks, George.
About the 666.
Thanks, George. I'm grateful just to finish what we've been discussing. And I've noted down your question. So could I, just before I begin with the 666, it'll help me if I can introduce a liturgical element to the discussion to balance what we're saying. I spoke about the liturgy in the apocalypse, and I would like your listeners to find for themselves. In Revelation 11, Revelation 11, 17, there is a wonderful psalm which begins, "We give you thanks, O Lord, God Almighty. In Revelation 15, there's the liturgy of preparation, and verse 3 begins with, "They sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, Great and marvelous are your works." It just goes on. That is a long psalm. So there are wonderful hymnotic and hymnic elements to the apocalypse. And I just wanted to say that. So we're focusing here right now on 666, but let's not forget there is a strong liturgical and a wonderful liturgical element to the book. Mm-hmm. It could be sang and chanted to inspire us and to remind us of the triumphant church. So, okay, now as we move on, I don't think that I spoke to you of the dragon. So we spoke of the two beasts. And before I get to the 666 again, there is a third member of this unholy triumvirate. There's three. We mentioned the two beasts. Now, these two beasts derive their power from somewhere. And it is from the dragon. This dragon, we don't have to ask ourselves who it is, because the writer himself tells us.
And do you think they're really these creatures, or are they created for something else?
No, they're symbols.
They're so symbols, okay.
They're grotesque symbols, and on purpose, in order to, through language, to describe to us how grotesque their inner workings or the machinations are, or how dangerous they are to us.
Okay.
It's like a painter who tries to express an image through a painting. And so the writer of the apocalypse does this through words and through a common palette that they have. So if we go to, so here at least John gives us an answer. If we go to Revelation, John 9, he tells us, "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." So I just wanted to mention that there was a third member, and the two beasts received their authority.
Sounds like Genesis, doesn't it?
Well, actually, there are strong connections to the book of Genesis, and we can discuss that at another time. But the two books are connected in an incredible way. The beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning of the world and the end of the world as we know it. That's an excellent connection. So when we look again at the number 666, and before I get to some of the technologies that I promised I would get to, we were looking at gematria, which is looking at letters and how they could add up to give us a name. So if we look at 666 ordinarily stands for falling short in the scriptures. It is incompleteness. It represents imperfection. 7, on the other hand, is a number that stands for perfection, completion, and fullness. And 8 will normally typify eschatological perfection. So interestingly, George, the numerical equivalent of Jesus, Jesus in Greek, is 888. Okay, now we get to the interesting point. Who is 666, or what is 666?
Or what is
it? How do we believe?
Exactly.
Yeah, how do we believe the early church communities understood the number? Who did they believe it was? And what does it mean for us today? Now, this is why understanding the context of the book, and also that it speaks not only of its time and of the future, but the apocalypse uses time in an incredible way. It mixes time. It speaks to the then generation. It speaks to the generations that would come shortly after the reading of the book. And it also speaks to the generation that will live in the end times. And so an understanding of its genres and of the way it understands end-time eschatology, the schedule, the calendar, helps to understand how a particular prophecy fits in. Okay, so now the numerical equivalent gives us Nero Caesar. So to get Nero Caesar, we transliterated from Greek into Hebrew, and that's 666. So Nero Caesar, the Emperor Nero, was considered to have been, for many, the Antichrist then, representing the beast, because not only was he an unpopular character for the Christian communities, he was also highly unpopular for the Jewish communities. I mean,
sure,
we know a little about his life, and he was notorious.
He's the one who ordered the slaughter of children and everything, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah. He ordered the slaughter of members of his family. And the slaughter of the children, of course, goes back to an earlier time, but he had no problems with killing people, whether they were his family, his wife, his own children, Christians, and a notorious figure who claimed also divinity upon himself. So, conversely, the numerical equivalent of the same, but transliterated from Latin into Hebrew, 616. So even a reading of 616 can give us Nero Caesar. So there is a good argument to be made then, that outside any symbolical use of the number, there could be allegory, it could be symbol, that it just points to wickedness, to the fullness of evil. But outside that in fact John could have been referring to Domitian, and it would be safer to make reference not to a present persecutor, I think, but to one of equal infamy, but of a previous generation. So there was also the legend of Nero Redivivus, a belief popular during the last part of the first century, that Nero would in fact return after his death in 68 AD. And a lot of Christians at that time, a lot of communities believed that this was in the guise of Domitian. So nevertheless, in the eyes, as I said, of both the Jewish and Christian communities, Nero was a reviled figure. So what we have here, we call a gematria, that which is related to words and numbers. Others hold, as I said, that 666 is a symbol rather than any sort of cryptogram, that it's performative and referential, that the number falls short of perfection, as we said, failure upon failure upon failure. But what I wish to stress here, as I did to you earlier, George, is that writing around 100 years after John put down his apocalypse, we mentioned this earlier, the greatest of all anti-heretical writers of the ancient church, Saint Irenaeus of Lyon, was quite at a loss to whom the seer of Patmos was actually referring to. So this is why I say, perhaps this should provide both a lesson and a warning to us to approach this pericope, this verse, with a little more humility and with a great deal of wisdom. For in the end, the number points to something or someone grotesque, which represents or symbolizes the absolute antithesis of what Jesus in the kingdom of heaven stands for.
If Nero was the Antichrist, the 666.
Well, George, not the Antichrist, a symbol.
A symbol.
He's not the Antichrist. He's a prototype. He's someone that the early Christian communities could look to and think, okay, so this is what John is saying. And it's a symbol, a type. It's a type of Antichrist that we, the future generations, can look at and say, okay, so for us, the Antichrist, this beast with the number, he will be a type of Nero.
I see.
Will have characteristics. Okay. This is what it means.
That makes sense, because
yes, exactly.
If Nero
exactly.
was that one, then I would have said, well, the apocalypse already occurred.
Exactly. No. And John makes this clear by speaking in time frames of kings that were, who are, and that will be. He understands. John uses time frames amazingly. Brilliantly, in order to speak in terms to both to the contemporary community and to communities which will follow. And these time frames are intermixed.
Is there anybody today alive that would fit that bill?
Well, okay. Well, John's Nero is the archetype, as I said, of all our tyrants, both past and present.
Right.
And those yet to come. Okay, so is there anyone today? Well, that's a very difficult question, because if someone would give an answer to that, that would mean that they have some particular insight. And I can't say that. I don't think any sober reader of the apocalypse would say that. They may point to individuals. They may point to individuals who have certain characteristics. For example, when Hitler was causing his havoc and spreading his evil, there was a lot of literature that was suggesting that he was the
Antichrist.
Sure, And Stalin. And there were even those who were suggesting that Napoleon was an Antichrist.
Some people say Ariel Sharon, who is still in a coma, but will probably be dead within a few days.
Well, some people, Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, the people have even spoken in the context of your own president.
Yes, you're right.
So this is the irony that it's very dangerous. And so if we look at what it signifies rather than what it could be, and there will come a time we will know. And again, I want to emphasize, George, it will come through the community of believers who will look at the signs. Now, I just want to make one other thing clear, that although we know that we cannot speak of a time or a day, and Christ makes it clear in Matthew, you know, when he has his eschatological prophecy, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven.
You know, that's why also,
but we can discern the signs. So it's a different thing to discern the signs. We can look for signs. We can discuss the signs. We can even hazard generations, but we can't specifically speak of dates or times, because then we're dealing into the areas of false prophets, and we know the damage that they have done. And there's also the question of people. George, I don't know whether you want to look at this. I've had people ask me whether they have unnecessarily been marked, and they have a lot of anxiety. Is that something you want to discuss now?
In terms of what?
People that have been concerned that maybe they've been marked without their knowledge. And I've had some people come to me in anxiety, and I wish I could say to them, and I hope I can say to people that may be listening, that will never happen. No one will ever get marked without their knowledge. That will never happen.
It's not like you're going to wake up and have some chip in your hand or something.
No, or go somewhere and be marked without your knowledge. Now, I'm not talking about implantable technologies here. I don't know about that. I'm talking about specifically about the mark of the beast.
Right.
It would be a conscious and willful act. And we see that in Revelation 49.
And what happens to those of us who protest and say, we're not going to do it?
Okay, now. Okay, so it would be a conscious and willful act. Now, so salvation is not guesswork. It's another matter, as I said, to be informed and to make a decision. Okay, now the question is this. What happens to those that protest? Well, we know that they will suffer. There will be a trade-off. And this is one of the motifs, or one of the foundational elements of apocalyptic literature. It's a genre of trade-offs. So, as I said, we will have an answer within the community of believers. For no prophecy of the Scripture is of any private interpretation, we are told. Okay, knowing this verse, that no prophecy is of any private interpretation. So we will know. So those of us who may want to protest about a technology that we may think needs consumer advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And look, consumer advocacy is a very important thing. And there is an important need for that. And you have someone in America who should be a national treasure. I'm talking about Dr. Catherine Albrecht.
Oh, Catherine's wonderful.
She's a national treasure. And so I think that she's a voice that has to be listened to, especially with her knowledge and her background. And She comes to this as a consumer advocate, which is very credible, very credible. So once we believe that there is a chance of a technology that may lead us into a situation that's called a spiritual harm.
And it's getting close.
It's getting close. It's getting close, and I will talk about some of those. So can I rather speak in terms of those who are living at those times? Because if you say now, it will complicate.
Right, and then the last half hour, MG, I want to take phone calls with a whole group of listeners who are lining up here.
So those who are living in those times will suffer. They won't be able to buy and to sell, for example. It'll be a commercial sanction.
Right.
So they will be persecuted.
Well, and let me give you an example for a moment, then we'll get your analysis on this. One day they may say to all of us, we are doing away with paper currency. It's gone. We're just not going to do it anymore. We're taking all money out of the banks, and all of you will be electronic. And, you know, if you've got $10,000 in the bank, it'll be there in this chip we're going to put in your hand.
Okay.
So when you go, when you get paid by the company that pays you, your monthly check or however often you get paid, the money will be in your account. And it'll be in your hand. And all you have to do when you go to the store and you want to buy your groceries and it comes to $242, You just put your hand right into this scanner, and there it is. And I think that's going to happen. I think that's going to happen within 10 years.
That it could be even closer than that, or it could be even further back. But that'll probably happen one day. I think we've got the technology.
Like that verse in Revelation.
Yes, yes. That is very possible and probable. And we saw in Revelation 17 that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So, well, you've made an incredible it's an incredible example, an archetypal example. So you're asking me if that actually happens, what would I do personally, or what would that mean?
Well, what will that mean? Because I know you won't get a chip, I don't think. Well, but then, well, you're out of luck. Then,
well, George, you've just given a, I think that's an example that Catherine will just say, bravo. Well, to me, yeah, that would be an example or a sign or a type that really, that's when you've got to draw the line. When we cannot exercise our finances, when we cannot buy or sell, when there is a when we are told that we cannot partake of any commercial industry or transaction without first giving allegiance or giving an oath or being implanted with a microchip or being scanned. Well, I think then we're dealing with a realistic interpretation of the prophecy.
I think so.
And
too.
People that will say no, they will suffer. They will have to make a choice. Now, this is not being alarmist, because if they make that choice, yes, they will suffer. They will lose. They will lose things for a time being. But then what will come back to them cannot be put into words. What they would get back in return, not only the protection of their Lord, but before the judgment seat of Christ, when history culminates, these would be people that will receive crowns, and they will see that they're martyrdom. And perhaps even the loss of life will have been more than a recompense for what they've received. So do you want me to say there will be a persecution? Yes. When? I don't know. And the example that you mentioned, yes, that is an example that I think is strongly archetypal. And even today, we are seeing that in certain ways in the commercial world. We're seeing that sort of technology. And, you know, George, there was something interesting. I was reading the scriptures, and I was reading Isaiah, and this verse came out to me, and it met, and for the first time it meant something completely different to how I had originally read it. And it's Isaiah, for those that are interested, 10:15. It's about the, I can see it now in the context of mythology. So shall the axe boast over him who hews with it, or the saw magnify itself against him who wields it, as if a rod should wield him who lifts it, or as if a staff should lift him who is not wood?
Hold on for one second. We'll be back in a moment, MG. We're going to wrap things up and take some calls with you next. Okay, we're going to take your phone calls with MG Michael when we come right back as we talk about the Book of Revelation. On our next Coast to Coast program, we are going to talk about the Fukushima disaster, how it may be affecting fish off the west coast of the United States, how it could be the radiation levels are entering our atmosphere. As a matter of fact, somebody from St. Louis sent me a little message that said that the radiation levels with the heavy snow are extremely high right now. They said 100 is considered a warning. It's like 77 right now. That's pretty high. Anyways, we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. And of course, the revelation apparently came to John when he was 92 years old from God, and he started writing that down. Is that accurate, MG?
He was old. Yeah, he was the last of the surviving disciples, because he was the youngest, of course, and he was an old man. And in fact, we're told when in Ephesus, there's tradition he was carried on a stretcher. He used to speak to people.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
he was an amazing, incredible story.
Let's take some calls for you. Then I have a few more questions.
Can I just finish with a quote, please?
Really fast, because I've got so many callers that if we don't get to, they're going to come get you in Australia.
And they referred to your two questions. Okay, now so Matthew 24:36. But of that day and hour, No one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. And then you asked me what happened to us, and I wanted to give you some good news. So we have in Revelation 14:13, and I wanted to make sure of these verses. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, "Write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on." Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them. So there are consequences, and those who survive in those end times will have a culmination to their life, which is worthy of reference and remembrance. So I just wanted to finish.
Very good. All right, let's take some calls. Let's go to Kimberly in Wisconsin to get this going. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Nice for you to take my call.
Sure thing.
Revelation starts out with a blessing in the first paragraph. It ends with a curse in chapter 22, 18 and 19, if you add to it or if you subtract to it. But I want to get on to Pontificus Maximus, title of the Caesars and Emperors, means our sun god on earth. Revelation 13, 18, here is wisdom. Let him that had wit count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. 666. Upon the papal crown is a little horn. If you see Daniel 7:8, it talks of the little horn.
Yes.
And the inscription in Latin, Vicarius Filii Dei. You take the Roman letters out of that, it adds up to 666. Now, the Pope down through time has been criminal to all Christians and Jews. If you go back and you do your history through the Reformation period and everything, he has been criminal. So the Pope is the seat that will be the Antichrist.
You think that's what it's going to be? What do you think on that, MG?
Well, these are very sensitive.
Yes.
Position, Sante, and I may differ on that, but our speaker obviously has knowledge of the scriptures, and she's come to a personal interpretation, and I can't necessarily agree with that, but. I think that the important thing is that we talk, that we discuss, that we share our conclusions, but always realizing that as individuals, our interpretations may be suspect and that they may not necessarily be correct, but that's her opinion. And
she's entitled.
I can't change her mind, and I will leave it at that.
Let's go to Michael in Dallas, Georgia, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Michael.
Hello, I bless you too. You're so great, and I thank my Lord for letting me talk. No, I understand the wedding that's coming. The Pope's going to do it. And if you want to know about 666, Seventh-day Adventist explains it well. Okay, and George, God loves you. And the number you got is 192. Everything's going to be beautiful because sin's coming off the earth.
I hope you're right there, Michael. I hope you're right. Michael to Michael. I hope you're right. Quick, so a question on Revelation. What was the thing about Israel being reborn as a nation as they were in 1948? Does that mean the clock started then?
Well, some say that, and that's a strong element in prophecy, and it may have started then. When Israel returned back to its roots, that's a common position, and I think that one that can be biblically supported, which means, but that also means that the future time is still open. We cannot speak in terms of saying, okay, so we may have a time that could be biblically supported, that Revelation will now be revealed, or the elements of the apocalypse will be revealed in another generation or two generations. So if we could fixate it on that term, that too could be unhealthy. But yeah, I think that that's an important, it's certainly an important element in biblical prophecy, the return of Israel to its place of birth. And people who say that can make a good argument. And I wouldn't argue against that, George.
We're in for some fascinating times. West of the Rockies is Patty in Missoula, Montana. Hi, Patty. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, George. Really quick.
Sure.
I think you're right. It's all numbers because 666, you can't round it off. And it's, I believe, a binary in the computer. 666 can never be rounded off. So it's all numbers. And there's a computer in Brussels, Belgium, called the Beast. It's binary something,
yeah,
something.
I heard
I
that.
Used
That's
to know
right.
all this. But yeah. Abbreviated, it's called the Beast. And God does tell us the time. He says, when you look up and see the clouds as if it's the hand of man, chemtrails, they're making clouds, you will know that the time is near. And
yes,
from the time the abomination to make desolate is set up, there'll be 3.5 years. And I believe that's the mark of the beast, too, that when people stamp their hands or their children's hands, it's like sacrificing their children to Baal.
All right, very good. Do you know anything about this computer, the beast, MG?
Well, we're talking about the convergence of technologies, and these are interpretations that I've always been very weary of. But when we speak of technologies, there are many. It's not just a computer. We're talking about global positioning systems, automated facial recognition systems, George, wearable technologies, implantable devices that can be maneuvered effortlessly or scanned, as we said. So when we speak about an actual device, we have to understand that as a carrier of a universal and a unique lifetime identifier, we're looking at the convergence of technologies, biometrics, RFID, and a mark on the body could be a radio frequency identification. A stamp on the body could be a tattoo in the form of a barcode or QRCs, quick response codes, or electronic forms of tattoo. You mentioned before the forehead and the hand.
Yeah.
And these are places where these technologies could be placed. And in the Old Testament, the Deuteronomy 6:8, for example, and thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and there shall be as frontiers between thine eyes. In the Old Testament, the hands and foreheads are mentioned together. It is normally in the context of loyalty. So these are places where a computer alone will have to be part of a network system. So a convergence of technologies is what we're looking at, really. Not one technology by itself. It won't happen like that, but the computer, of course, will play an important part.
MG, when John wrote Revelation, was it done to warn us or to tell us?
Very good question. Very good question. Both to warn and to tell us. It was both of these were aspects of the book, and if we forget those elements, we miss out on what the book is about. We miss the lesson. We miss the message. So he wanted to tell us, and by telling us, he was warning us and allowing us to make a commitment or to put ourselves in a situation where we can say, yes, I will believe in these words or I will not believe in these words. And that's how the book begins. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants, things which must shortly take place, okay? And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant John, things which must shortly take place. So to show us, and to warn us. And throughout the book, there is this revelation and this admonition. Absolutely, both. We cannot separate either one from the other.
That's
important.
Lucy's in Simi Valley in California. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, George. I'm so happy to find you. I love you. Thank you for all that you do.
Wishing you a
prosperous 11th year.
Happy
New Year to Tommy and all your staff and Mr. MG Michael and the whole Coast audience. Hello.
Thank you.
And I had a near-death experience October 2001, and very, very quickly, thumbnail sketch it.
Yes.
The tunnel people taught me many secrets because I argued with an angel and said, Satan can appear as an angel of light, so if this is of God, take me to him. It took about 8 interviews, and they did take me to God, and so I've been taught many secrets. And 666, the tunnel people told me, the 6th seal, the 6th trump, the 6th vial. That's 666 in the book of Revelation. And the forehead mark, that's just the knowledge of the Christ or Antichrist. And in the hand is doing the works of the Christ or the Antichrist. Protesters delivered up only for 10 days. And the Pentecostal Holy Spirit will speak through your own voice box to answer the Antichrist.
All right. What do you think of that, MG?
These are personal revelations again. And I think that as individuals, what's important is how we respond to them. The danger is if we make them universal teachings, and then we can misinterpret what they mean. But if we accept these revelations on a personal basis, if we don't try to make them into a universal teaching or create a movement out of them, if they inspire us, if they help us, then they're beneficial. But we have to look at these revelations which come to us alone as being specifically for us alone, and to ask ourselves, How can we use them? To what benefit can they be? Maybe by sharing it. But as long as I use it in the context of sharing and not in the context of doctrine, then I think it's an individual will determine for him or herself how useful these revelations are. That's the important thing.
York, South Carolina. Roy, it's your turn. Hi, Roy.
Hey, hello.
Good to have you with us, Roy.
Okay. You was mentioning earlier how they counted down from the alphabet, from A being 6, to B being 12, to C being 18, all the way down. You yeah. write out the word computer, and you add up all the digits, and it adds up to 666.
Oh, boy.
And also, one of the early ancient Hebrew for numbers was letters, and it was a W. So that would mean WWW, tying both of them in together. Well, it ain't necessarily got to be a computer chip. It can just be your fingerprints or your yep. retina scan.
That's true.
Yep.
All tied in together yep. to eat and everything else.
That is so true. Thanks for those comments. Sooner than later, somebody, they're going to start.
Convergence.
It's going to be interesting. Well, you know, they're already starting trying to, you know, get the chipped kids in school and everything else. So. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a matter of waiting, of praying, of being sober, of listening to each other, and of being informed, of listening to consumer advocates who have inside knowledge and who have understanding of these things. So this is what the important thing is: sobriety and a comprehension of these technologies and the potential and the knowledge that they will work together as a system in concert. There won't be one technology alone, and if we forget this, we'll be focusing on biometrics or RFIDs or plain microchips, and then we may miss what it's all about. The important thing is to remember that, in all probability, it'll be microsurgery that will cut or pierce subdermal layer of our skin. That's an important thing I think to remember with this technology that we all have to be aware of. That's what I believe, George.
Okay, let's go to Brian now in Colorado Springs. Hey, Brian, thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
And love to both of you. And I want to thank you for, you know, having me on the program tonight.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
So I'm a light worker from Colorado Springs. I've been studying up on as much as I possibly can over the last year and a half or so.
Wonderful.
And I think I have an understanding of what 666 possibly means, and it's really just the destruction of truth. Our bodies run off of alkalinity; they run off of alkaline, which is, you know, electricity for our bodies. And if you look at the Monster logo on the Monster energy cans, each one of those stripes is actually a 6 in the Hebrew numbers chart. And that actually has a very low alkalinity in it. So that's just saying the destruction of truth, as in it numbs down our bodies, and we're not necessarily able to successfully use our bodies to their full potential. We have a pineal gland in the very center of our brain, which is our third eye. And if we don't have the proper nutrition in our bodies, this destruction of truth, which is all the GMOs and all the things that we put into our bodies, they shut down our ability to connect with the universe. Have either one of you opened your third eye?
Oh yeah, I do all the time. I've done that, and it's helped a lot. We've only got a few minutes left, Michael. We may take another call or two, but
George, I found. Were you referring to this verse in Matthew 24:32? They learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know the summer is near. Was that the pericope you were referring to before, insofar as when Israel became a state?
Yes, that's it.
Yes, that's the verse. Yeah, that's a very important.
Anyways, give us your website if you would, and I know you're blogging now too, aren't you?
Sorry, am I blogging?
You're blogging now, aren't you, these days?
Oh, George, thank you. Look, yeah, it's a humble place. It's a humble place where it's mgmarkwood.com. And it's where I just share some thoughts and some of my hopes and aspirations and hopefully what comes out of that website is the joy and the love for the Creator. And somewhere where hope and endurance and faith in God stands out and inspires people when they want to come outside of the daily grind and share some insights with me. So yeah, it helps me, and hopefully that my journey, it's basically a putting down of my journey, a little bit of my story through a blog, which are meditational pieces, and through a journal where I share pieces of my diary. So it's a recollection of where I've been, where I hope I'm going, and reaching out to share these thoughts and to share some love with spirits on a similar path. Because more than religion, I try to practice spirituality, and I think our spirituality actually reveals what sort of religion we practice.
That's so important.
I think, yeah.
Michael, my friend, thank you for being on the program.
George, thank you, and thank you to your callers. I really couldn't hear that well, so I had difficulty in hearing the callers, so I may have not really been on the ball there, but I thank them, and I really enjoyed speaking to you. Your questions were fascinating, and they were right where they had to be.
Okay, my friend. Be well. MG Michael, live in Australia. And, of course, we'll see you on our next show. For Nathan Staton, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Merles, George Knapp, John V. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there, way out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.